Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a guest scheduled for today on handwriting analysis, and we're having a bit of a challenge trying to reach him, so we're going to go ahead and start the program, and when he does call in, then we will be bringing him online. Doc Grayson was going to be my guest today. So what I wanted to do was start off the show by saying phone lines will be open during this. Oh, wonderful. Doc Grayson, are you here?
I sure am. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing magnificently. I'm so glad you called in. For those of you who have just tuned into the show, this is Donna Sebo, and my guest today is Doc Grayson. Now, this is a man who does a work that I find utterly fascinating. I just love it. And it is something that we all are intrigued with. What is that? It's handwriting analysis. Now, why is this so important? Well, we're going to be talking to Doc Grayson, and today what we're going to do, we're going to be functioning, or focusing, I should say, on children this particular time. And we're going to be having Doc Grayson on again on a later date to talk about adults. But let's go into this, Doc Grayson. How in the world did you ever evolve into making this your profession? This is a very unlikely environment for most people to even get into. What got you into handwriting analysis?
Well, I was at a restaurant one time years ago with my family, and this gentleman came around and said for $2 he would do our handwriting. And my brother, myself, and my mother were three that were brave enough to do it. And he told things about my brother, told things about my mother. Then he went to me and told things about me that I didn't know anybody in the whole world knew. I'm a very private person, so it shocked me. And at the time, I was taking classes at Loyola University in guidance and counseling. And it took me a couple of weeks, and I realized, hey, this would be awesome. If this really works, it'd be fantastic. So I looked into it a little bit more. We didn't have the Internet then, of course. Went to the library and got books. And then there's found a couple organizations that teach handwriting analysis, and I use that. Now, I wanted to use it mostly with adults because that's where it's used. Mm-hmm. But at this time, I was teaching elementary school, actually second grade for a number of years, and I could see exactly what I was learning was applying to youngsters. But you have to step back a little bit, realize that they're not mature. And there's still other things, but the same things are there in the writing, whether they're 7 or 70. So that's how I got into it. And having taught for 40 years and done handwriting analysis, it just comes natural, and it was a great fit. I've done more good for youngsters with handwriting than really with teaching.
I think that this is so important. And when I got your book, and its title is Better Understanding Your Child Through Handwriting, I thought,
yes,
my goodness, this is so valuable. And I get so upset when I hear young teachers today talking about how cursory writing is such a waste. They don't need it. Let's just put them on a computer. And it's so...
Majority of school districts do not teach cursive anymore. They'll teach printing in first or second grade. But many school districts, as you know, give the youngsters iPads or computers, and everything is done that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, with No Child Left Behind and all the state regulations, cursive is not tested. And, of course, now, sad to say, the way education is, everything is geared towards test results and how you can verify something. So they really don't put in the time with cursive because it's an added waste of time is how they feel, because I've got to do well, have my youngsters do well in the different tests for math and science and spelling or whichever. However, there are more and more states, which I'm very happy to say, that are beginning to require cursive being back in the curriculum. They're realizing there's a big gap now. The youngsters that do not learn cursive, they're not practice handwriting, their coordination and some of their thinking patterns are not quite as coordinated.
Absolutely.
Because there is
true.
A big tendency between the brain cells and the writing, because it's as analysts, we know that it's really brain writing, not handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brain
Absolutely
that controls
true.
The hand. So
Absolutely
we all know
true.
Our handwriting changes. Well, it's going to look one way if your best friend just passed away, and it's going to look another way if you just won the $52 million lottery.
I think you just
plug that down into children's writing, and it's just phenomenal. You can the nice thing about working with children, when they know your handwriting, Alice, they'll ask a few things, and all you need to do is tell them a few things, then they think you know everything. You think they know what kind of toys they have at home. You know, they just project this beyond. So it's a great avenue into getting help for the youngster. Because they're willing to accept it.
Yes. One of the things that I wanted to bring out were some very important points in your book. And I feel in my minor exposure to handwriting analysis, and we've all gone to fairs or places where they have machines that do handwriting analysis, which I think are so much fun to do. And they you know, they've gotten pretty good at it through the years. They become more and more sophisticated with the computer technology. But this is a brain connection that I know for a fact, because I knew a gentleman many years ago. His name was Henry Silver, and he's passed on now. He was very elderly when I got to know him. He was called into the Howard Hughes case as one of the handwriting analysts that were to make some evaluations regarding forged documents. And one of the things that I remember him telling me about is that if someone understands handwriting, just like you're talking about with the children, which we're going to be discussing more, you can also determine if someone has a predisposition towards physical problems that are coming up, because it is directly associated with the nervous system, with the brain. And there's so much that you can see about a person's mental state, about their health state, and this is reflective even with the children. Now, I was fascinated to learn that the first known book on handwriting was published in Italy in 1624. Now, that's amazing
to
me. I had no idea that.
Well, in the European countries, handwriting analysis is held in high esteem. In India, it's almost revered. If you're a handwriting analyst, you're above everybody else. In the United States, it's, up until about 81, 82, it was in the occult section of the Dewey Decimal System in the library.
Mm-hmm.
But by petitioning by Rose Matusik, who was a handwriting analyst, and giving data and different information to the government, they finally placed it in the psychology section of the library. So that gave a little credibility. You know, interesting history. Edgar Allan Poe was a handwriting analyst. And he also wrote in the newspaper, wrote articles. When he didn't like somebody, he would make up all kinds of stories about them and attribute it to what he saw in their handwriting. And that's kind of how it got caught into the occult section, because they just felt, you know, he's writing this bad thing about me. I don't want people to think it's true. So it's a fake. It's corny. We'll put the occult section. So it took many years to get it out of the psychology department, into the psychology department. And that has given it some credibility in the United States. But it still lags way behind the European countries.
I remember Mr. Silver telling me that he studied in Paris, because as you said, and of course, he's been gone for a long time now, but he told me, he said, this is something we studied quite a bit, and like you said, in Europe it was much more respected, and he found that it was his life's work. He just absolutely loved it. Now, this does tell the grapho analysis and does give a real good insight into people. And I can remember when I was talking with him at the time I was single, and I was trying to look at compatibility. I said, can you tell about compatibility? Because I didn't know anything about handwriting analysis to speak of. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, yes. He said, you can look at the handwriting of individuals, and you can tell whether or not they would even be remotely compatible. And we had there was a gentleman. He said, bring me some handwriting, and we'll see. And so this one gentleman, his handwriting, the bride brought, and he said, oh, this is a good one. But this guy and I just, we didn't get along at all. it wasn't the person. There was just not the chemistry. But anyway, I got a big kick out of him. But he said, oh, yes, you can tell a lot about people. Now, let's go into some information on writing, because anybody, and regrettably we're not visual here where we're like on television, because I think that this would be just awesome. You have some wonderful diagrams in this book, Better Understanding Your Child Through Handwriting, but it also is relative to adults. The writing slant. Now, my slant goes towards the right. It has for as far back as I can remember. And in my understanding, when you have someone that has an extreme left slant, and there are extremes, you have people that can be the extreme with the right, et cetera. You have people that can write straight up and down. It almost looks like what you described, like a goose step. It's straight, 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 straight. And this is fascinating. Why is this slant so important? What is this brain writing showing with the slant?
Well, the first thing we look at is the slant, because that's the emotional makeup of the individual. Everything hinges on that. Once you know that, then you begin to build the pieces together. If it's vertical writing, kind of straight up and down writing, those are the people that are ruled with their head. In other words, they think first and act later. They don't make quick decisions. They don't make rash decisions. They kind of think things through, they balance the good with the bad, and then they'll make a decision. So many times they take a long time before they decide to go to the movie with you. You ask them, do you want to go to the movies tonight? And they'll sit there and think, well, let's see, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, or I can do that. Now, again, there's degrees, but if you go right slanted, it's the person who's more deals with the heart. You want to go to the movies? Oh, I'd like to go to the movies. Yeah, let's go, let's go. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. And they'll react very quickly to things. But they also paint themselves in the corners many times, because they'll say yes, and then afterwards they think, oh, man, I should have said that. I got six other things to do tonight. What am I going to do? I got to work around things. So sometimes they react too quickly. They are emotional, but they're very people-orientated. The further the slant, the more people-orientated they are. You're in a good spot. You're in radio. You deal with people. You talk to people. You enjoy people. You like to be around people. That fits you. If you were a vertical writer, you might make a good news person, because you would strictly talk about the facts and information involved, but you wouldn't get real involved in the social aspects of things. Mm-hmm. If it's the left-slanted writing, many times we put that onto left-handers, but there's more right-handers that write left slant than left-handers. But you look at it right away, you think, oh, that's left-handed writing. But it's not. First of all, the nice thing about handwriting, it does not discriminate. You can't tell age, you can't tell sex, you can't tell race, and you can't even tell whether it's left or right-handed. You can sometimes, by a microscope, see the way the lead is or graphite is on the paper, or the way the ink is, but you really can't tell whether it's left or right-handed. But the left slanted writing, those are people that everything, and this isn't selfish, everything revolves around them. In other words, you ask them, they're going to go to the show, they're going to decide, let's see, what's the movie? Okay, that movie. Now, is that something I want to see or something I don't want to see? They're going to view it more from, what can I gain out of it? What's the best thing for me? So it's just how they approach the general aspect of life. So if you have somebody, you talk about compatibility, and you have somebody that's a vertical writer and somebody that's a far right writer, they could be compatible, but the next step in working with a person with compatibility is explaining the other person. Now, the person who slants right, they could say, I love you 20 times a day. The person who is vertical writer, ruled by his head, He might say, I love you once a week. But when he says, I love you, it's 20-piece band. It's, oh, this is awesome. I really love you. Where the far right slant person just says it. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. So it's compatibility is important. But with the compatibility, you say, well, this is how this person is and this is how this person is. Can you get along and do it that way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, when you and your wife, I have to ask this. I'm very nosy. I want to know, when you and your wife were submitting bravely your pieces of paper to this person that was doing the handwriting analysis for you, what did you find out about each other?
What was that last part?
What did you find out about each other that you didn't know?
Oh, yes. And in some ways, yes. Even now when I do an analysis of somebody who's been married 10, 15 years, and you start telling them, and they'll say, oh, that's why you did that, or that's why, oh, now I feel better, now I understand. It's, you just get a better feel and an idea of the person as a whole, and you can see that in the handwriting. And the same way, like you said, with my wife, it works the exact same way.
Fascinating.
And the nice thing about both of us, since we both do handwriting, she's not into it like I am, really, but she's, by osmosis, she's gotten it. But you can catch your own self when you see yourself getting uptight or angry or frustrated or, you know, extremely irritable. You see that in your writing, and you can correct yourself right away. Uh-oh, I better cool it.
Now, one of the points with children, when you would want, if you were interested in doing this and having them write things out, I have noticed, first of all, let me ask this question. There's a lot of things that I'm wanting to ask you, and they're buzzing through my head. First of all, what would you have someone write? What is there a particular poem? What is it that you have someone sit down and write out for you?
Well, it's best to have something that they had written before that they're not thinking about this going to be analyzed. I often tell people, if you can bring me a grocery list, that's a very natural, ordinary list that you do. You don't have any emotions when you're buying fruits and vegetables and bread. It's just a matter of fact. So that's a way to do it. Another thing is to write something they might know, like 47 years ago, or copy a paragraph out of the paper. It doesn't have to be anything necessarily true, but if you have to set them up and say, well, you copy this paragraph, then you want to ignore the first couple lines of what they write, because the first couple lines are going to be trying to do it a certain way because he's going to analyze my writing. And then after a while, they just kind of get into the process of writing, and the bottom lines are much richer than the top lines. So what they write is not that important, but it's the process of how you get them to write something. With teachers, whenever they wanted me to do a child's writing, I would say, you know, when a youngster passes a note to somebody else in class and you collect it, save that note, not to punish the child, but put their name on it and the date. And that's what to use if you want the child's handwriting to be analyzed. That's going to be more of a natural one than school book writing. The most difficult thing is doing what we call school book writing, because they're writing to please the teacher. They're writing because this is how it's supposed to look. Now, usually as an analyst, we can say that it's and see that it's kind of fake writing. But the other good thing with youngsters is in their workbooks, although few and few places use workbooks, but that's the best place because they're only thinking about the answer. They're not thinking about anything else. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing years ago, I hate to monopolize conversation, but years ago when students used books in the 70s and 80s, used workbooks, and they usually kept them the whole year, you could start from page one in the year in the workbook and go to the end, which was the school year. You could see how the child developed and progressed during the year.
This, I think, is very important, and I think if there were an opportunity for teachers to really understand how valuable this is, if a child started, let's say, exhibiting behavior that was really out of character, and I think there's such a disassociation today because of technology, and there's so many new modalities that have been adopted that don't enable a teacher to get to know his or her students, which it was so something years ago that this is something that was very, very important. And when you see a child's behavior changing, their handwriting is going to change. And maybe it's something at home. Maybe they've gotten into a gang association. Maybe they're being beaten up by somebody, bullied. There's all of these variables because childhood is not something that's smooth and silky. It's usually filled with a lot of rugged ups and downs. And I thought to myself when I was going through your book, how wonderful it would be as an aid for a teacher if you had students writing things out, not doing their papers on computers, but to actually have them writing it out and saying, something's going on here. This usually is a student that gets B's or, you know, C pluses, B's, maybe even A's, and now they're flunking. What's going on? And they would have something, not just what you'd call the real facts as far as the kid not performing, but you'd be able to see emotional patternings here and maybe know how to approach this child so that you could.
Yes, you would. That's why often when, if a parent contacts me, which I get quite often, and they'll say, this is the problem, child's problems, or this is what he's exhibiting, I'll say, well, can you pull some papers that you might be able to find that was from 1, 2, 3, 4 years ago? So you can see the, like exactly what you said, the pattern change. Also, maybe they always felt underloved. And so when you, if you see while he's in trouble and he looks underloved, you'll say, well, he doesn't feel like people really love him. But that was, that could have been his whole life. So there's other things that change. Maybe all of a sudden the writing has got very, quite a bit smaller or quite a bit larger, or all of a sudden is now compressed. Those would all tell us things that, you know, what's happening to the child now and what is occurring.
I know there are some people I've known in life whose writing is very tiny. They are people that I found out are individuals that love dealing with detail. They're not necessarily interested in being the upfront person, but they're the kind of person that really you can depend upon many times. But they're writing.
Yes, you can. And the tiny writers like to work on one thing from beginning to end. They finish that, like you said, details, and they move on to the next. They like to be. They like to work alone. Now, in job placement, this is very beneficial. If you get somebody who's a tiny writer and place them as the receptionist, that's not going to work because they're either going to talk on the phone, they're going to talk to the person asking them a question, or they're going to be typing a letter. They can't multitask very well. And so they just do one thing at a time, and that's the person you want. You put them in an office. This is what you do all day, and this is what you do, and they'll do an excellent job because they like to concentrate on one thing at a time and get it done.
I love the example in your book of handwriting by Thomas Edison, and he was what you described as a cumulative thinker. There were rounded M's and N's, and this
and very
was
slow, obviously,
very
writing, very carefully done.
Yes. Thomas Edison, it was his writing, and the teachers thought he was a dunce.
Right, right. Because, again, though, this is very vertical. He just wants to make sure things are the way they should be, and things are exact, and all the ducks in a row. So, you know, he would do a science experiment 50 times, 49 times it would fail. Didn't bother him. He was going to do it the 50th time. And that's that slow, methodical, rounded writing. Now,
well,
often in school, those rounded writers get labeled as not very smart because they aren't quick to give an answer. You ask, the teacher will ask, how much is 2 plus 2? Almost everybody else raises their hand, but the rounded writer will think, let's see, 2 plus 2, that's 2 fingers, and 2 fingers, that's 4. Well, I know, but by the time they raise their hand, the teacher's on to the next question. But they're going to get it correct. I often tell people, you know, the rounded writer is the doctor I want to do heart surgery on me. Because he's going to remember exactly how it should be done, book form. He's learned it, he remembers it, and he's going to do it one step at a time. He's not going to get emotionally involved in something. He's not going to get carried away or try something new. He's going to do what works, the Thomas Edison syndrome, you might say.
Now, I had to chuckle at one statement in your book because you have shared things with parents and you've spoken to groups about handwriting analysis. And a child will have maybe mixed patterns. Some of their letters will be vertical. Some of them might go a little bit to the left. Some might go to the right. And a parent may think, oh, my goodness, what do I have? Do I have a child with mental illness? No, not at all.
You actually just have a normal child kid. It can drive you crazy because they go six different ways, but they're just enjoying life. They're trying different things. They're experimenting. They're just having a good time, and they're extremely adaptable.
Another aspect of writing that I have noticed so much of with younger people, and it's more with the girls than I haven't seen a lot of the males' handwriting, and I'm far from being the person that you are in skill and expertise, but it perplexes me. I have been around younger women anywhere from, I'd say, their 20s, up to maybe about in their 40s. And their handwriting reminds me of a child's handwriting in that it's so childlike. Now, some of them are highly educated people, and I look at this and I go, my goodness, it's as if they've never grown up.
And they haven't. And you're precisely it. It's kind of what we say girls writing. As I said, you can't tell whether it's male or female, but there's a lot of traits that will kind of tell you that's probably a female. But I know the kind of the rounded writing, the oval writings. You're true. They can succeed, but they're not ready for marriage yet. And I would suggest that a young man not marry them ready yet. You know, let them mature a little bit. They're still kind of enjoying their childhood, even though they're successful. They're just not ready to button down and deal with the real world the way it is. They're great friends. I mean, they're the girls you want to go out with other girls, you know, have fun, enjoy things, and have good laughs and go out for a drink or something. They really enjoy each other, but they're not ready for a lot of mature things yet. And that's not necessarily negative. That's the way they are. In handwriting, nothing is really negative. You can be stubborn, but sometimes it's positive to be stubborn. If somebody's trying to make you smoke dope and you don't want to, I'm stubborn, I'm not going to do it. That can be positive. So it's how we use all these things.
Absolutely. I just love this topic. I think it is a fascinating topic. It's very useful. And in this book, relative to children, I think that there are so many points of information, including squiggles in primary printing, that I think
You don't get a lot out of squiggles, but you begin to know whether the child is more outgoing, more withdrawn and inward, whether it shows part of development, because in an early child, it's always me, 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 me. After a while, it becomes you, and looking out, and you can see that progress. And you can also begin to see if it's very rigid writing and scribbling back and forth, that's somebody who has a lot of pent-up anger or energy or, you know, gets frustrated very easy because the angles are kind of a resistance type thing. If you get the rounded writing, the curly cues and the thing, that's just kind of a like a butterfly. Bouncy, I'll go here, I'll go there, just kind of a carefree attitude in life. So it helps you to understand how the child is developing and what the child could be like.
Now, Dr. Grayson, how can people find out more about you and what you do? Do you have a website?
Yes, the website is called HandwritingSecretsRevealed.com.
Handwriting Secrets Revealed.
And there's links all over that where they can get children's writing or compatibility or genealogy or job seekers or cursive. There's also a section that is very beneficial. It's called graphotherapy. And that's where you you work with people on how to change certain things in their writing to change their personality.
Oh, that's
you can't change anything. You don't want to change the slant because that's the emotional basis. You don't want to change the emotional output of the person. But with youngsters, one of the first things we look at is a T-crossing. That solves a lot of problems with youngsters. Where you cross your T is where you set your goals. So if you cross your T about halfway up the stem, you set moderate goals. If you cross the T towards the top, you don't plan for tomorrow. You plan for summer vacation. If it's the T crossing is above the T stem, you're really a dreamer. You've got goals you're not going to reach because they're not set in reality. They're above everything. The important thing is if the T crossings are low, if you write the word the and the T crossing is lower than the top of the E on the letter E in the word the, that's low goals, and low goals are the only thing you can say about low goals, they're low self-esteem. They're not going to try it because I'm not going to make it. I can't pass that test. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. That permeates their whole attitude. And one of the big things I work with youngsters is just that simple fact of getting them to cross their T's higher. Now, there's a lot of debate on what occurs, whether it's actually because they keep thinking, I'll cross the T higher, I'll have better goals, or is it crossing the T higher automatically becomes part of their personality? I don't care as long as the results are there and they feel better about themselves and they'll take chances and do some things and have more, feel like they have more success.
Well, Dr. Grayson, this has been wonderful. I know you've got a new book coming out. I'm looking forward to receiving it, and I would love to have you on the air again. And I just think
I would love to be there. I'm impressed at how well you not only know the book, but the great questions you asked. You really dug into that book and got a good feel of it.
Oh, it's marvelous. I just think it's absolutely fabulous. Dr. Grayson, I look forward to having you as a guest again, and be sure to get that new book off to me as soon as it comes in. And for those of you listening, this is so much fun. It really is. It's fun to explore yourself, but also other people. It opens up some marvelous conversations. HandwritingSecretsRevealed.com. HandwritingSecretsRevealed.com. Dr. Grayson, thank you so much for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Hey, telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, after many days of feeling here in the Pacific Northwest like we might have to end up getting out our kayaks to float our way to wherever it is that we're wanting to go, the sun is out, the golden beams of absolutely Glorious sun. Woohoo! We are so excited here. We know here in the Pacific Northwest, nobody ever grows old in the Pacific Northwest. We just rust away, that's right, because of all the moisture. Oh, well, we just really, really enjoy it when the sun comes out. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. My goodness, can you believe it? The 4th of July is just around the corner. How did this year go by so fast? Well, we've got a great lineup of guests next week, and I wanted to quickly share some information with you. On Monday, we're going to be talking about 101 different ways you can approach job searching. Abby Cohut is going to be my guest. Susie Cohen on Tuesday. She is known as the 24-hour pharmacist. This is a woman with a tremendous background in chemistry, and boy, does she have a book about drugs, the positives, the negatives. It is going to be an interesting time. And then What If and If Only, Anne DeMella. This is a lady who has been writing romance novels and is going to be sharing with us how, through ebooks, she is finding that people are buying her books. That's right. So we're going to be learning about how technology has enabled a woman to enjoy a level of success with her publication. And The Art of Waging Peace, Paul Chappell is going to be my guest. It's a wonderful, wonderful subject to talk about on the 4th of July, Independence Day, because we had to fight for the right to be what we describe as a free nation. We're going through the same battle today. It's an ongoing battle, but why not see what we can do to do it differently? Stop fighting in the same old ways that have been done for, well, who knows how long. So we're going to be discussing that, and then on Friday of next week, we're going to be talking with a mom, Eleanor Vincent, Swimming with Maya, and this is about her daughter. And I think that you will find it not only very heartwarming, but very, very enlightening as well. So we just have a dynamic lineup for the upcoming month of July, and by golly, blinking, it's going to be here. So just know we're also going to have the postings of information regarding the guests as well as a brief write-up for the month, as I've been doing for years now. You'll have that available to you here on bbsradio.com. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. Dave Woodruff, who is the brother of broadcast journalist Bob Woodruff, wrote a wonderful commentary about his brother and his family. And he said it had to do with faith and belief. This is what he said. He said, "The key to believing that my brother Bob would recover was the incredible strength of the bond that my brothers and I have. The mutual support we provided each other and the support provided by the rest of our family members created a rock-solid structure that wouldn't allow my faith in his eventual recovery to fail. Even in the earliest days of Bob's injury, I never allowed the idea that there could be just three brothers or somehow diminished person in Bob. It just wasn't an option. When he woke up on March 6, 2006, after being in a coma, and it became apparent that he had emerged at a miraculous recovery level, even at that early stage, my belief in his eventual complete recovery grew, bolstered again by the bond of four brothers we have been blessed with. The adage, where two or more gathered, really is a very true one. I think that so many times in today's world, then I don't know that it's any more than at any other time, but it seems to be. There's a sense of isolation, the separateness. It's as if we live in little cocoons of isolation, forgetting that we're part of the human experience and that grief is okay to share. I'm thinking of a very dear friend of mine who, in the mature years of her life, and she had had a very blessed life, extreme success, abundance of money, family, you name it. I mean, this is a woman that people on the outside would have just said, whoa, I want some of that. How do I get it? And I couldn't blame them. However, I found out that this woman, in her maturing years, life started to slap her down with big whammy sticks. And first, there was a major lawsuit. Then there was a husband that walked out on her. Then there were major health problems that suddenly surfaced. There were just all of these things that seemed to hit her, one right after the other. And what enabled her to weather all of this is, by the grace of her own inner wisdom, she said, I had to talk about it. I had to allow myself to be seen as someone that was wounded and injured. No, she didn't wail and moan and go become a drama diva. That's not what she did. But people said, something seems to be wrong. What's happened? So instead of holding it all in and trying to be the strong soldier, she just said, this is what happened. I don't know what I'm going to do. Do you know that the rallying of support around this woman was incredible? And the reason there was such a support is that, first of all, she wasn't whining and being a drama diva. She was just saying, I just don't know what to do. I feel lost. And so many of the people that she had supported and cared for didn't turn away from her. Instead, they said, here, let me help. And they would ask her, how can I help you? And so many times when people say that, we'll go, oh, no, 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 it's okay, I'll do it. Have you done that? I sure have. Instead of really taking the time to think and saying, may I think about this? Thank you very much for your offer. Now, you may or may not take advantage of it. But many times people are very sincere. They want to help. But you have to let them know. You have to tell them what your need is. And for heaven's sakes, don't do what I did for so many years, because it's what I was taught. Stiff upper lip, this is what you do, and if you can't figure it out on your own, that's the way it is. Then it's all your fault. Life sometimes is, and frequently I would say, very unfair. It has nothing to do with a right or wrong. It is just the way life is. And as one teenager once said to me, life sucks at times. Well, that's a little bit obnoxious in statement, but isn't it pretty real? So I think sometimes we need to be able to have integrity with ourselves and to know that if there is a need for help, you ask for it. Worst case scenario, as my mentor would say, is nothing happens. The best case scenario is that someone may say, let me help you. Let me tell you what I see. But down to the basics, it's up to you to make the choices. But how are you going to know what choices are available to you if you don't ask? And sometimes you might get insight from people in a million years you would never think would even have it. They may be able to tell you exactly where you could go, what you need, and how you are able to do it. I had a young man. I had to take my car in. Life works out so interestingly. The battery on my car finally decided to give up the ghost, and we were able to charge it so I could get it to a local repair shop. And there's this young man that's in there. He's very knowledgeable. So here I am, and I'm sort of thinking, well, you know, I'm having to pay for this. So I'm just sitting waiting in the waiting room, and all of a sudden he begins to chat. I find out this young man has a lot of internal discomfort with food. He's got allergies. He's got sensitivities. And we're chatting, and I share with him some of the knowledge that I've gained from many of the guests that I have in my radio show environment. And I passed it along to him, and I've got to get a list of reading material because he's interested. Now, in a million years, would he have ever thought that somebody sitting in his lobby would have had the knowledge that I had to share with him? You never know what's going to walk into your life. And I thought, how wonderful that I've crossed paths with someone where some of the knowledge that I've gained from others, I'm able to pass along. And that's the way life is. It's sort of a give and a take and an ebb and a flow. And this is something that when you have something to share, don't you feel good when you can? That's what life is all about. So if you need help, don't be afraid to ask for it. This is Donna Sebo. When we come back, I've got some good things to share with you, but also I'd be delighted to give you insight into anything that you might be feeling is a challenge for you. Call me at 888-627-6008. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be right back.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. I have a Scotty, as those of you know that are regular listeners to our show, and our Scottish Terriers through the years, we've always cooked for them. And I have been getting information from different sources about how many different animal foods, dog foods, cat foods, are being recalled, either because of salmonella or something where there's mold in the bags of the food that's discovered. I mean, it's just, we get all of this information. And many of these companies have very good integrity, and they are recalling stuff en masse because they don't know what's triggered this. Something maybe went wrong with a packaging machine. Who knows? It's just all kinds of stuff. But I've always been an advocate of feeding dogs, well, sort of table food. And I've cooked the food for my dogs for years and years and years, because what I noticed is with my Scotties, when we got them, any of the canned food caused severe digestive problems with them. And so very quickly, I had learned how you could put chicken in a crock pot and just, you know, put, let it cook. And then sometimes some of the bones you could even, you know, crush between your fingers. And that could go in, and I'd mix it in with rice or oatmeal or this type of thing and add a little bit of new extra vitamin powder maybe to it. And my dogs always were just extremely healthy. And even today, I do it. And it's something that when I come across information put out by a vet, I go, okay, let's check this out. And there is a veterinarian, Dr. Pitt Caron, and he's published things through the years. And I thought I would share this with you because I always share recipes. But I thought that it would really be good to share real food recipes. And there's wonderful recipes that I've come across for making biscuits or things. And, of course, I think more and more they're finding out that the raw food is very much better many times for your dogs and your cats. I've had guests on my show that have had a tremendous change in their animals when they go to a raw food diet. But they're very, very careful about where they get their food and who they get it through. So if you know a butcher, believe it or not, there are still those in the areas that we live in that have their own butcher shops. I think we've got one or two in our own areas besides your super, you know, super box stores that you have of different types. But you can get your food and you can prepare it. But this one I thought was particularly interesting. It's called a quiche without a crust. And of course, your dogs and your cats need high protein. This is something, unless they've got a particular ailment, and then a vet can advise you on what you should substitute with. But a cat especially has to have extra protein, a lot higher than even what we humans need to have. So you need to remember this when you are feeding them. And if you want to make the most of what's left over in your refrigerator, you can do this for your animal. But it's a quiche without a crust for your animal. Now, this is what you can put in. This is what Dr. Karen recommended. About 3 cups of what have you cooked. It could be grains. You know, it could be any kind of grains that you have. It could be some crumbled tofu, cottage cheese, meat, chopped raw or cooked vegetables, especially zucchini, tomatoes, onions, spinach, broccoli. Now, you don't do an extreme with, there's some that say onions are very bad for animals, but my dogs have eaten onions. I don't put a whole onion in their meal, but usually it's cooked. It's not raw. They won't touch it raw. And if you want to use any seasonings, you don't put in cayenne, although I have to tell you, my Scottish Terrier, Victor, loves spicy stuff. He just loves it. Don't ask me why. None of my other dogs did. But Victor's got his own taste buds. So you can use tamari, yeast, or garlic. You have a half a cup of milk. You have a cup of grated cheddar or jack cheese, 3 beaten eggs. And then if you want to put in some vitamins, powdered vitamins, whatever, go ahead and do it. Now what you do, you mix all of your ingredients except your milk, cheese, and eggs in a medium-sized casserole dish. You scald the milk in a saucepan and stir in your cheese until it melts. Add the eggs to the milk-cheese mixture and pour it over the rest of the casserole. I'm lazy. I put all of it in a blender. It's done. And then I pour it over. And you bake it at 350 degrees for 30 minutes or until it's firm. And you can pre-mix, as I said, your vitamins into the casserole. Or you can add it if you want to add it later on. You can do that, whatever is your preference. But the animals do like variety. Have you ever had a pet, if you tried to feed them the same thing, and they sort of look at you? Well, my Scotty Victor has this attitude. That's what I'll call it, an attitude. He does not like anything the same one meal after the other. He will walk away from the food. I need to learn from my Scottish Terrier when to walk away, because he'll only eat until he's full, and then he just leaves it behind. It's perfectly all right with him. It's just fascinating. Sometimes our animals can teach us very important things. How many of us do that? When we start getting full, do we continue to put food in our mouth, or do we make it okay to say, "Yeah, I've had enough"? That's what he does. So it's just a recipe, a quiche without a crust. And if you'll notice, there's no flour added to this. So if your animal is allergic to wheat, then you obviously would not use that grain. But you can there's other grains. There's millet, there's oatmeal, and that's the big one in our house. We use a lot of oatmeal with food that we prepare for our dogs. But anyway, Dr. Pitt-Karen, thank you very much for that little bit of a recipe. And just, you know, there's just so many wonderful things that we can explore to keep ourselves healthy and our animals healthy as well. I wanted to share a quick story. Uh-oh, I'm out of time. I'm not going to be able to do it. Can you believe the hours just whizzed by? This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And if you're feeling as if life has kicked you in the teeth recently, that's all right. Just say, thanks. I'll straighten out those teeth, and I'm going to get my bite back in life, and I'm going to move ahead and move along, because you have choice. What are you going to do with your challenges? Face them right directly on, because it'll make a difference. And believe it or not, you'll be able to get past it. That's right. And you'll be able to shine your light on other people as well. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. I hope you will next week. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent weekend wherever you are. Be safe, because I don't want you to miss anything here on The Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.